We're going to have a reading now, which will lead us into the talk that John has for us, and we'll be having communion after that. So I've asked Tony if he will help us with the reading. It's going to be a bit of a joint effort. If you'd like to look up Exodus chapter 13, we'll be reading from verse 17.
Thank you for your prayers, brothers and sisters. Good evening. But please keep praying, because we can do nothing worthwhile without prayer. Exodus chapter 13, verse 17 onwards. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country. No, that was shorter, for God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road towards the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt, armed for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Ephraim on the edge of the desert by day. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of its people. Then the Lord said to Moses,
tell the Israelites to turn back and camp near Pi Haroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord.
So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We've let the Israelites go and have lost their services. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us up out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses,
why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen.
Thanks for that reading, everybody. And just for those opening remarks, Jill, thank you. It was almost like you knew what I was going to be talking about tonight. Let's just pray, should we? Father, we pray tonight that as we study a little bit of your word and just think about a few of the concepts in your word, we just pray that our eyes and ears may be open to what you're saying. And I pray that, Lord, that the things that I say will be just a channel for you. And Lord, help me not to get in the way of you blessing us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Ojan, I wonder if you can just put there's a few slides that I want to look at tonight. Now, there's some names up there, you can see. And they are a particular group of names. Can you, anybody have any idea what the particular significance of this group of company names is? Anyone care to have a stab? Yep. Sorry, John? Sponsor sport. What was yours, Ruth?
Top quality items.
Yeah, anybody else? Josh?
Giants.
Pardon?
The Giants.
Giants, yep. Okay, well, the reason for those, they're probably all right, all those those responses, but the reason those names, company names, are up there, that was a list that was published, if you go on the next slide, that was a list that was published last October by a group called Super Brands. They are Britain's top 10 favourite brands. And they're brands that actually are quite surprising, actually, in a way, I think. And I was quite surprised, Matt, that that Cadbury's wasn't on there. But you're probably not now. And in fact, they published 20, actually, the top 20. This is the 10 of the top 20. And actually, Cadbury's are not even in the top 20 now. And, pardon? No, not Kraft either, no. There's some surprising ones, and Google is way down, actually. But Google's about number 18 at the moment, and I thought that would be really high. But these are brands that say quality, I think, aren't they? Ruth was saying, and Josh was saying, you know, these are giants. These are people that have been around a long time. They're perhaps traditional for us. We look at those brands and we think, yep, they're safe, let's say. And people obviously think, having voted for these, that they are the brands that they can trust. You know, and they have been around a long time and they're consistent. We like consistency, don't we? We don't like things that are a little bit iffy. We like to know what we're buying. And so these are brands that have a lot of trust. And many people actually have tried to imitate these brands as well. There's lots there that have been imitated, and they say imitation is the, sincerest form of flattery. Yeah. And so if someone imitates you, that means you must be pretty good. Now, I've got a real-life example of brand loyalty here this evening. And it's all to do with my wife, who is here tonight, 6 weeks ago today. You were here as well for part of the service. So we thank God for you, and thank God that you're back with us tonight. The story that I was going to tell you was about brand loyalty. Now, I discovered a couple of years ago, she sent me off to buy some biscuits, some digestive biscuits. And so I duly went out and did my duty and came back with the digestive biscuits. And they were completely unacceptable to her because they weren't McVitie's. They weren't McVitie's digestive biscuits. And the ones that I'd brought home were half the price. Well, the ones, and I did a little experiment yesterday. And I went into Lidl's and bought some digestive biscuits. There they are. Digestive biscuits look pretty good, don't they? They've got the word digestive on there. They're biscuits. It's the right colour packaging. They cost 31 pence. Okay. Now, these are also digestive biscuits. They've got the picture of the biscuit, and they've got the right colour. They've got the word digestive on there. Or they've got McVitie's on, but apart from that, it's the same. How much were these? £1.09. So these were three times as much as these. These happen to be called Towergate. And these are McVitie's. So no-brainer, isn't it? Blokes, this is the one that you would buy, Towergate, because it's 31 pence. And it's a digestive biscuit. And, well, we might have a taste later and a blind tasting. You can see which is which. But the point is that Angela has a blind brand loyalty to McVitie's. She won't even try one of these. It has to be McVitie's. And so that's the power. That's the power of brand loyalty. And it's all about trust, isn't it? Because she knows if she picks up a packet of McVitie's, she knows exactly what's going to be in the packet. It's the same every time. It's like all those other brands that we saw earlier. You know what you're going to get. Trust. And this is what we want to talk about tonight. What actually is trust? Well, there was... can you put the next slide up? Not with the... It's probably a little bit smaller. Should have made that a bit bigger. I'll read it anyway. This is a consumer trust report, consumer trust in brands report from October last year, and it says brand trust is the willingness of the consumer to rely on the ability of the brand to perform its stated function. Trust is important in all aspects of life, from brands, business, and financial services to food content, relationships, and friendships. And then right at the end there, trust matters. Trust matters. Very important. And there's another slide here, Ojan. And I would add to that trust is crucial in all aspects of life and fundamental to our relationship with God and with our church family. Trust is fundamental. It's a basic building block of what we're trying to do as church. We will not get anywhere without it. So we have to ask the question then, why is that? Why is it so important? And it's really, I think, because we have so much change, not just in our church now, but generally, when there's a lot of change, we need to have trust. Can you put the next slide up? And trust matters because change happens. Paul Marvin spoke last week on how to be a spanner, and I desperately wanted to call this talk tonight "How to Be a Nut," but I couldn't actually get it to fit. So. So this is all about trust, and trust matters because change happens. And you would actually think, if you think about it, that we would be used to change. Our world changes, doesn't it, at an unprecedented rate, and technology change in my lifetime has been enormous. Anybody here remember that... that a blackberry and an apple is something that you eat? It used to be. You can't depend on that now. You can still eat them. And John Addicott will know this, that when you used to be able to take your film to the chemist and have the pictures developed of your trip to Bognor, wait 2 weeks, and then to find out that you'd had the lens cap on or something like that. But that's a measure of the rate of change. And there's only more serious things. If you think of the Berlin Wall, that's what I was thinking of. 1961 to 1989, that's when it was there. Nobody knew that was going to come down, actually, although there were ideas about, you know, the crumbling of the USSR. But nobody thought, I don't think, that wall was ever going to come down. And it did. And it came down very quickly. 9/11, you think about what the skyline of New York was like before then. And in just one morning, it changed. The whole thing changed. And nowadays, we're living with that change the whole time, aren't we? With terrorism all around us. And whenever a destabilizing event like one of those things happen, it could be man-made, it could be, you know, like a hurricane or a volcano or some natural disaster, the stock markets, don't they? They go crazy. They go absolutely wild. And because they like stability, they don't like things that change at all. And it makes investors very nervous about losing the value of their investment, and they go into gold, you know, because that's a traditional safe investment. And share prices drop like a stone. And it's all because of trust. It's all because of change. So when things like that happen, we get very, very jumpy. And it can quickly destroy our stability. And the church as well is not immune to change as well. In fact, not quite related. I came across this Adrian Plass quote the other day, or definition. Adrian Plass defines change as change. It's a rare phenomenon as far as the church is concerned, except when it comes to the collection. And even then, it tends to be fairly limited. But so in the church, we're not immune to change, and we know that. We've seen lots of change. And there has been change in God's universe right from the very start, hasn't it? It was founded on change. The turmoil that was there right at the very beginning. And if you think of the people that were laughing at Noah as he built his ark, you know, and that first drop of something wet came out of the sky. They didn't know it was rain because it hadn't rained up until that point. It was a huge change. And just about anywhere you look in the Bible, that's what we're seeing. An enormous amount of change, which is why we need trust. God doesn't change. Human nature doesn't change. But situations and people do change. God doesn't change, human nature doesn't change, situations and people do change. So in that Old Testament reading that Tony and Jill and Pete read earlier, it was the Israelites were undergoing a huge amount of change. You know, they had been in captivity for hundreds of years at that point when they left Egypt. And even though they were perhaps crying out in desperation for God to relieve their free them from their captivity, even so, they were very sort of entrenched, if you like, in that lifestyle. They must have been, you know, and there were no one living had ever known anything else. So to come out of Egypt suddenly was an enormous change for them. And in fact, if you read back a couple of chapters earlier, God actually said to Moses when he was talking about the Passover, he said, "Today will be the first day of a new month." Or is the first day, in effect, what you were saying, you're going to start a new calendar? Well, I mean, that's weird, isn't it? It's totally, you know, we always know what today's date is, don't we? So if someone says, well, actually, no, it's today is December the 31st instead. You know, it's mind-boggling. So to come out then was a huge wrench to them, but they did leave Egypt. But what we read there, if you read that in the when they just after they'd left Egypt, there was another huge change, because Moses said, God said to Moses, actually, not that way, Moses, that way. I want you to go back towards Egypt. And can you imagine what the people were thinking at that point? You know, here they were, they'd left Egypt. They'd got the Egyptians behind them. They were heading towards the promised land that way. And then Moses suddenly says, actually, no, chaps, we're going that way, not that way. And they must have thought he was absolutely crazy. So unexpected to appear, a completely stupid thing to do. But they went. And then Moses said, well, actually, we're not going back towards the Egyptian. We're actually going down towards the sea. Okay, so we're going down this hill towards the sea. We've got the sea in front of us. Well, we've got no boats, but okay, we've got the sea in front of us. We've got mountains either side, and actually Egyptians behind us. And they're gaining pretty fast. So I know how I would have felt in that situation. Again, a huge amount of change. And actually, if you think a little bit further forward into their journey towards the Promised Land, they had enormous changes on the way. Things weird happened, like manna and, you know, dropping from the air. No one had seen that before. What is it? Okay, they ate it and they were sustained, but it was just against all the natural order that they knew. And walking around Jericho for seven times. Okay, it's going to fall on the seventh. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we better do it. They did it. But the answer to all that, if we look back on into that story, the answer was, when the people were facing the water, the Red Sea, the answer was to, God said to Moses, trust me. And in turn, Moses said to the people, trust God. Just wait and see. It will happen. And so there are loads of examples. But interestingly, if you just move forward to Exodus 19, verse 9, you need to look it up. But God said to Moses, this is just before he was about to give him the Ten Commandments, I am going to come to you in a dense cloud. This is God to Moses. So that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you. You sort of expect God to say, always put their trust in me, don't you? But he said he was going to speak to Moses in the cloud so that the people would put their trust in you. So here we know that God trusted Moses. Moses trusted God. And God knew that the people would need to trust Moses. So there's lots of trust going in lots of directions here. And I think, you know, God knew that the people would need to trust Moses, because they could only trust things that they could see, you know, and maybe talk to. So trust is so important in any relationship. And there's another quote there. You can put that up. No, okay, you've gone ahead a bit. Okay, that's all right. You can leave it on there, Eugene. Yep. This is a guy called Ken Blanchard, and he's written a book called Lead Like Jesus. And he says, without trust, it's impossible for any organization to function effectively. Trust is essential for two people to work together. And he talks about it as a stream. I won't read it all. And he says, yet trust is a stream with a fragile ecological balance. Once it's polluted, it will take time and effort to restore. But the always present power to restore intimacy and broken trust is love. So even though trust is broken, it doesn't mean to say that that's the end of the road. Remember Jesus and Peter? In Matthew, Jesus said to Peter, you know, he exercised trust in Peter. You're going to be my rock. You are the rock. I'm going to build my church on you. You are the foundation stone of my church. Yet Peter subsequently denied Christ. He said he didn't know him. But then we read in John, it's a lovely picture of reconciliation and trust when Jesus said to him, Peter, do you love me? And he asked him three times, do you love me? And he said, yeah, of course I love you. And each time he said, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. And as I said, that was such a lovely picture to me of reconciliation, but also of trust, because he was trusting someone, even though they'd made a hash of it, to go ahead with the original mission of being the foundation of the church. So just to come to a conclusion then, just move on one, Ojan. You know, we're in this fellowship, we're going through quite a series of changes, obviously, and big changes. And we need to be ready to follow that same model. Move on one, please, if you could. Yeah. That we've read about there in that story of the Exodus, that we need to be trusting in God, that we need to know that God puts his trust in us. That's a very important thing to understand. And we need to be willing to put our trust in each other. And I think I can speak on behalf of the elders here that to say over recent weeks, we've been very grateful, actually, and honoured with the trust that's been shown to us by the fellowship. And it's been we've had some very difficult decisions to make. For me personally, it was one of the most, well, the most difficult decision, I think, since I've been an elder, to come to the church to make that certain recommendation for the pastor. And of course, with that trust comes a big responsibility. But it is made that much easier knowing that there is a two-way trust, and that's amazing. It's a very powerful thing, and it's one of the things that has come out of this whole process, I think, that we're learning, I hope, to trust each other. Corrie ten Boom said, never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. And that's what we're all in the process of doing, trust. And my favourite verse to finish, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lead not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. So I would argue that actually we should be giving Tower Gate a good crack of the whip, really. Okay, he looks a little bit different, got a different name, slightly different covering, but he's a biscuit. You know, he's part of the same family. And it could be a risk here in eating a Tower Gate digestive. But it's something that we've got to do. You know, trust can be very risky. But let's give it a go. I'll pass these around later.